monsieur, c'est tout à fait impossible. Vous ne pouvez pas entrer comme ça. Il faut changer de vêtements.
Oh non, that French. Parlez-vous English?
Monsieur, what I said is that you look like a piece of adolescent American dog shit.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg. You know, I can't hear the intro at all. I don't even hear the gunshots anymore. That's how it's learned.
Here's a little, some behind the scenes, how the sausage is made trivia for you guys. Because we do this remote now, all these fancy sounds are on my end. And because we're using Microsoft Teams, if you're listening, Mr. Microsoft, I don't know who that is these days. I think it thinks the sounds, even though they're going through my computer, are like background noise, and so it like cuts them out.
Speaking of backgrounds, I've put my kickboxer poster on a wall that Tristan can't see either, so I'm sorry about that. That's for my meetings because...
That's all right.
But he's watching over us.
Our friends of the show can't see it either, though. Hey, but we're going to do video soon, right?
We are.
This is the plan.
That's
we're just getting our shit together on that because it's, you know... You got to have a whole aesthetic going for that. And I live in a small apartment and I don't, I'm just wedged between my bed and my closet right now.
Yeah, but I can't tell
good for
that.
Acoustics.
It's like you've got exposed beams. You've got.
That's true. I do have beams.
You've got beams. And
beams
walls.
Are off the charts.
Yeah. Exposed bricks and such. It's very fashion.
It's fashion.
It's so fashion. But we're not here to talk about.
Beams. Unfortunately.
Oh, we're in the middle of a spy miniseries called Spy Guys.
Yeah. Are we halfway through? Is this the halfway point maybe? Not
just
including
about.
Fans' Choice. Yeah, this is what including. Who knows?
Let's address the elephant in the room, Tristan. We had our first round of votes back. I observed that Sneakers seems to have been eliminated.
Yeah, Sneakers appears to be the what was the one last for the vampire mini?
Near Dark.
Yeah, Sneakers appears to be the Near Dark of this vote, where it seemed like a fan favorite, but then when the vote came along, I mean, it was real close, and maybe I should have planned the bracket differently and not put it head to head in against Goldfinger in round one. But it was tight, man. It was tight. Every vote counts. So vote or die, as they say.
Yeah, well, you know, for all the people that voted for Goldfinger, you can Goldfinger my ass.
Kirk's been waiting to say that for a while. Yeah,
it's a strange
can
thing.
Can you hear
to
my
say.
Ooey's and stuff
when
I press the ooey's? Okay. Yeah, see, Mr. Microsoft knows that that's like a voice, I guess.
I think that's Bulma's influence. Bulma would respect an ooey.
He fucking would, man.
Clippers. Yeah, so that was a hard one for me to come to terms with over the last couple of minutes. You know, we adapt. What else do we do? We adapt. We overcome. I don't know.
Yeah, we do all that. Hey, I got to play the thing.
Oh yeah,
Spy Guys.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
My name is Bond. James Bond.
Have you ever killed anyone?
Yeah, but they were all bad.
Oh, come on. You're just an analyst.
I present you the ballistic missile submarine rate of Cobra.
Try not to muck it up again.
That's our man.
Raise no us, you psychopathic bitch.
Five, four, three, two.
So far, this is not blowing my skirt up, gentlemen.
There you have it. Some fun music.
When's Austin Powers? Is that next week?
Austin Powers is next week, I believe. This week is a little film called If Looks Could Kill. Came out in the year of our Lord, 1991. What can you tell us about that year, Greg?
Well, interestingly, Tristan, in the context of spying and all things espionage, Soviet Union. It was the end of the Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
End of the Cold War. But you know what? Yeah, there's better podcasts to tell you about the Cold War, probably. So do you know what else happened in 1991?
What?
A little game dropped called Lemmings. The Year of the Lemmings. That's right, 1991. I mean, Lemmings, it was a big deal in my house.
Okay.
Were you a Lemmingsman?
No, and I was, but I was so jealous. No, because I didn't have a computer.
Yeah, it was early.
Yeah, and so it was like the coolest thing. It was such a cool thing. And it's a cool idea. Is that still around? There must be some new version of that.
I haven't had time to have a little look since. Yeah, it'd be tough on the phone with the tapping and such.
Yeah.
But I am down to find I'm keen to play Lemmings. I want to.
You know
play
what? You know what old game I downloaded on my phone a while ago?
Mm-hmm.
Myst.
Oh, you said this.
That works because the touch screen. And you know why else it works?
I couldn't get out of the library.
Yeah, you know why that's why else it works, because of the internet. I could just look for the answer.
I
never got so far.
That.
It was amazing.
I didn't get anywhere in that game, literally. I couldn't get out of that first library. But Lemmings, I think I was okay at.
Yeah, Lemmings, I never even played it. I think at one point I was at a friend's house and he let me watch him play. But like at that point in my life, PC gaming, I couldn't even get my head around it. Like, what, you use the keyboard? What are you doing there? It all seems so complicated. Yeah. It's like fucking flying a plane or something.
Yeah, but you're basically flying a plane. Well, you're in control of Lemmings' lives here.
That's true. Got a lot of passengers here.
A lot of passengers. Do you know what else the guy that does it? This was designed by David Scott Jones.
Okay.
You heard of him?
No.
Scottish video game programmer.
Was he in the Monkees?
He also created, I don't think so. I don't think. He could have been. You know, people do many things. You know, they have the average person has a few different careers. He also created Grand Theft Auto.
Now that's interesting.
Yeah. Which you could argue has got a Lemmings type mentality about it.
Well, a lot of death.
A lot of death. Disregard for human life.
That's so interesting because, you forget how simple those old GTA games were, right?
They were crazy simple. You just had the fire, what do you call it, the flamethrower.
That I played at a friend's house. Yeah.
From, it was just bird's eye view, wasn't it? The camera angle.
Yeah, that was mind-blowing stuff, though. Man.
It was. It was. Man, and they evolved it. Now, Lemmings didn't evolve that same way. I think there was a Lemmings 2, All New Worlds of Lemmings, 3D Lemmings, and a couple of other sort of spin-offs, I guess, in the later 90s, but not quite the same, I guess.
I feel like we're ready for something like that. Like, that feels very Switch-friendly, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the right platform for that.
Well, do you know, it was originally designed in Paint Deluxe or Deluxe Paint. Do you remember that?
Fuck, I love that shit. Yeah, that's just crazy, man. Do you remember when we did GoldenEye, the movie, about 4 years ago? One little thing we learned there that I've never forgotten was, because we talked about the game as well, and I think the development team was like 8 people or something. Like, games have changed so much. Now they're like movie productions.
Yeah.
And obviously GoldenEye is more complex than Lemmings with the 3Ds and such. And it was a pretty, like, air quotes, revolutionary game for the time. But, yeah, like, the fact that you could just make – well, I guess you still can make games really simply, but that's what games were then. You could make it in fucking Paint. That's crazy.
That's it. It was basically the chat GPT of the time.
I reckon I could make a game in PowerPoint. I'm pretty good at PowerPoint. I do all our artwork in PowerPoint.
It's true.
It's true.
You're a PowerPoint artist.
Yeah, I'm a PowerPoint artist. Isn't that depressing?
Would you describe – would you describe your style as abstract emotionalism?
Yeah. Someone's been reading Richard Grieco's Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah. I go to all lengths here.
Model. More actor, on that later. Artist.
So, big year for video games. Aren't you a little old for video games?
Yeah. Big year for video games. big year for movies too, Greg.
Yeah. What do we have in 91?
Yeah, 91 is a big fucking year for guys like us, man. Terminator 2, Judgment Day, that changed the game.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Beauty and the Beast was around. Hook.
It's Peter Pan.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Silence of the Lambs.
Peter Pan.
That's good. JFK, Adam's Family, Cape Fear. Ooh.
Oh, that was on telly the other night. I watched 20 minutes of it.
Yeah, was it hitting the spot?
Yeah, it's awesome. De Niro's epic in that. He's
fucking jacked too, man.
Yeah. And he bites a girl's face off.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, it's a little bit hectic. I thought the whole thing was that he didn't actually do anything, but I misrecalled.
Yeah.
That's not a word.
I'm pretty sure that's based on one of those Simpsons episodes about Sideshow Bob, right?
That's exactly right. And he turned, because
how many rakes did he step on?
I think it was six.
It was also the year of Hot Shots, the year of Sleeping with the Enemy, the year of City Slickers, which we've covered, the year of The Last Boy Scout, which we've covered. In fact, half of those movies I just mentioned we've covered. It's a good year, fucking good year for movies.
And there's plenty in there. There's plenty of juice in the tank.
It's the year of Double Impact because I do karate and because of my strong legs, I can do the splits.
No problem. Back and forth feels nice. What a strange scene. What a strange scene.
I think you mean perfect scene, Greg. It's a perfect scene. Strangely, man, Point Break. Yeah, you're a Point Break. What the fuck's going on here, man? Is this the peak of, wow.
Humanity?
Of all the things. We're not here to talk about those movies, though, of course. It was a nice trip down memory lane. We've talked about the Cold War. We've talked about we've talked about Lemmings. We've talked about all the aforementioned movies. But we're here to talk about one movie in particular. And that's a little film that didn't quite crack any ranking in the global box office. But domestically here in the US, it did rank at a, modest 119 for the year. That film.
Illuminati.
Yeah, Greg's doing Illuminati signals. We're not doing video yet, Greg. No one knows.
I just think it's funny. This film didn't scrape the surface. Maybe that was too real.
Oh, you think they got censored?
Yeah. We'll never know.
We'll never know.
Unless you search it on TikTok.
The film we're talking about, of course, is a little film called If Looks Could Kill. Kill came out in March of 1991 with a budget of $14 million at a gross box office of $7.8 million. Damn. Rotten Tomatoes, critic score 29%, audience score 50%. No critic consensus. Now, this either means that it's so insignificant that they didn't write one, or it's just so controversial that they couldn't align on one. Couldn't reach a consensus, Greg. People don't want to hear
the truth.
I think you mean sheeple, Greg.
Sheeple don't want to
hear. Yeah, I think you mean sheeple. They don't want to hear the truth, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of facts, like it's basically a documentary of the creation of the EU.
I was wondering how quickly that would come up because, I was like, wait, did he just invent the euro? More on that later. Was this a big movie for you, Greg?
No, but. It was a big movie for my sister.
Oh, really? Was she a Greco woman?
She was a Greco woman. Mm. Big time. That picture, she had pictures of him all over her walls.
Wow.
Including him on the bonnet of the car.
Interesting. So you'd heard of it?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Ah,
and we were a 21 Jump Street house as well.
Right.
21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
So that's how the song went. I used to share a room with my brother, and there was a TV in my room when I was a kid. Like, I've turned out TV. But
I had one too, man. But that's all we had to stay up.
Yeah, that's right. We used to watch 21 Jump Street on Saturday night or whatever it was. It was like 8:30 or 9:30 or something like that.
Yeah.
And Grieco was obviously in 21 Jump Street. So he was a familiar figure in the Carney house.
Interesting. What was your perception of him in those days? Cool guy?
I don't remember, to be honest.
The vibe.
Yeah, it's honestly, I was so young, I can't really remember.
Interesting.
But yeah. I know that he was a favourite of my sister.
This was a pretty big movie for me, Greg. This was a...
Was it?
Yeah. Well, I chose this one. I've been wanting to do
but
it.
But I just thought it was like one of those obscure, oh, I've always wanted to see that.
No, I saw it. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. This was, I watched this at Jono's house. I can't remember if we watched it a lot or if it just left a big imprint for some reason. You know, when you're a kid, you don't really, some things just stick in there. Yeah. But yeah, it was kind of a big deal. It was sort of in that same wheelhouse as Toy Soldiers. And I say that because I was reflecting on it today. Before I looked into it again recently, I always just thought it was Sean Astin that was the lead, but that was Toy Soldiers. Oh. And so I think I just had them all mixed up in my head.
Different.
Yeah, but Sean Astin back in the day was a cool guy. In Toy Soldiers, he was a cool guy.
Mean back in the day, still, Pots and Pans.
Oh, he's a cool guy now too, but he's more of a jolly cool guy. Let's say.
I know what you
I'm with her. Like the rest of us. So this was in rotation. I'm not sure to what extent, but it is so deep in the recesses of my brain that I'll save some of this for the rewatch, but in broad strokes, like I did misremember a lot of it. Like stuff that I realized, I guess, over time before even the rewatch. But like, for example, I thought he was Sean Astin. I thought Linda Hunt, the little lady, was
Billy Kwong.
Yeah, exactly. I thought she was the gadget person, and I say this because I've always thought that, you know, in The Incredibles, how there's that little lady character, Edna Mode.
Yeah.
I always thought she was a riff on this character because I thought she was the gadget person in this movie, but I just completely muddled that in my head. But I always thought, oh, that must be a thing and it's a reference and not many people get that. I'm pretty smart. I get it. No, it's not, because she wasn't the gadgets person.
She looks heaps like her.
But there's a vibe there for sure, right? It's got to be based on her, just more generally.
Surely.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, like at least as a human.
Yeah,
if not this character.
But in saying that, I did remember the necklace whip thing. So I guess, it's all just a jumble in the back of my brain there. So it was ripe for the member berry picking, I dare say.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's why we picked it. Oh, and I should say, before we get too far into the show, again, these spy movies, man, they make you do some, you know, deep cover work to even be able to watch them. Last week with my challenges watching True Lies, you had the same thing this week with this very movie.
Thanks for the hookup, bro.
And friend of the show, VHS collector on Instagram, sorted it out for us. Ironically, he didn't send us a VHS, but definitely give him a follow on Instagram because his Instagram is a manifestation of all the things we talk about. He's got a vast VHS collection. He's always posting about different movies and he has fine taste, I dare say.
Speaking of member berries, it's a pop of member berry each time he posts, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you forget what the cassette looks like and then you see the cassette.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that now.
Even that gives you the warm and fuzzies. Like yeah, yeah, yeah.
It really does. Takes you right back to 1991.
Yeah, yeah.
The warm lights of Video Easy or Blockbuster.
Maybe some gummy bears on the way out if you're lucky.
Simple times.
Should I get into the origin story of this picture?
Yeah.
Origin story.
Now, again, in the spirit of spy movies, Greg, there's this whole thing's very secretive. There's not a lot out there about this film.
Well, this is it. Yeah.
So what we have here, though, Greg, quite interestingly, is a real story-buy scenario. And, you know, we're story-buy-men ourselves. We're always pitching story-buys. No one's picked up on them yet that we're aware of. Get the lawyers ready in case any of them show up.
Yeah. No one's credited us.
But this story-buy was by a man named Fred Decker, who also wrote The Monster Squad with Shane Black. He also wrote Ricochet and he co-wrote.
Oh.
Yeah, this guy's got some ideas, man. He also wrote Robocop 3 with Frank Miller. He's got some uncredited work on Demolition Man and Lethal Weapon 4. So he sounds like an interesting dude, perhaps maybe even one of our guys. He did also co-write 2018's The Predator with Shane Black. We talked about it last week for some reason too, and I think we decided with no evidence that that was Shane the studio's Black, fault. I tell you what, I think he is one of our guys because I was reading his Wikipedia page and he has more story by credits than actual writing credits, like screenwriter credits. Or maybe the same, I can't remember. But, they're, you know, comparable. And we've always said, why, can you have a career as a story byman? Because that's, man, I would fucking love that. Maybe we should speak to him at some point. What's his financial situation?
I think you've got to be a Nepo baby for that.
Yeah, true. Why couldn't my dad have been Ted Danson? That would have been handsome.
Yeah, Ted Danson.
Ted Danson.
And then you could have been the baby from Three Men and a Baby.
And then I could have got even with him later on in life.
Three men and a little Tristan.
Three men and a 10-pound baby. I was a big baby.
Well, Ted Danson's not small.
That's true. Maybe he is my dad.
Have you had a DNA check?
I have not. Maury? I have not.
Ted Danson is the father. Where were we?
We're at Fred Decker. Fred Decker had an idea for a film he called Teen Agent. And the crux of the idea was, what if we took an Anthony Michael Hall type figure, perhaps played by Anthony Michael Hall, from a John Hughes film scenario, and put him into the rich spy world of a James Bond film? You know, a real adventure.
Writes itself.
I mean, that's a great story, but I think that's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's not a lot of information out there about this, but apparently the producers wanted to rewrite it specifically for Richard Grieco. Which is it?
Grieco, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay, Grieco it is.
Pretty vast.
Yeah, you have a vast knowledge.
It's not vast.
So, yeah, I don't have much more context on that part, but that does kind of track because, you know, let's say this was 1990. At this point, he'd already been in soap opera One Life to Live for a few years, been on 21 Jump Street from 88, and then his own spin-off, Booker, in 89.
Booker.
So he's on the trajectory, and this became his feature film debut. So that does all kind of track. But here's a little interesting nugget for you, Greg.
Yeah.
I mentioned the rewrite. Guess who they got to rewrite? Well, this is not going to be that mind-blowing for you, but maybe for some people at home, they got a little writer named Darren Starr.
Darren Starr.
Yeah. Darren Starr of 90210 fame. Darren Starr of Melrose Place fame. Darren Starr of Central Park West fame. Darren Starr of Sex and the City fame.
One of the most successful TV creators in the history of the box.
Yeah, yeah. He found his format and he stuck to it because he didn't have many movies under his belt. He also, you know, wrote the TV show Gross Point, which was actually pretty good. That was like a parody of teen shows or like, I can't remember, but I remember liking it. He also makes Younger, which, you know, some people listening, but mostly wives of people listening, I'm sure love. Same goes for Emily in Paris, which truly seems like a terrible show. The rest of these shows, you know.
Oh, is he on? Does he know Emily in Paris?
Yeah, like that show.
So he's still pumping out the hits.
Man, Younger's still going too. Like, or maybe that just finished. I don't know. But Emily in Paris, I mean, I'm not going to go on a rant, but that show's pretty fucking terrible from what I can tell. I've never actually watched it properly.
Yeah, I tried to watch it and I was disgusted and I tried to get it. I tried to get Carol to explain it to me. But I think, you know, the fact of the matter is it's not made for us, so we
That's true.
Just don't get it.
But in saying that, man, 90210 Melrose Place, Central Park, I can get on board with that shit. Like, I'll watch it. But something about that show, you're ultimately right, though, of course, Greg, because, you know, we have our JCVD movies and, you know, they don't like that. And that's fine too.
But they're idiots.
Horses for courses. Yeah, net, they're idiots, we're smart.
Oh, I've got to be careful. When I say they, I mean everyone besides my wife, who's a genius.
Oh, yeah, same.
She's back listening to the pod. She's got a commute now, so she's back listening to the pod.
Ah.
So I've got to I've got to be careful what I say.
Hey, Carol, leave a review. So in terms of direction, this film was directed by a guy named William Deere, who also made Harry and the Hendersons and Angels in the Outfield.
Of course.
So he's a nostalgia man. We could do a whole miniseries just on him.
It'd be pretty, well, that's kind of it, isn't it?
And that's kind of, well, yeah. And that's kind of it with Origin Story too. I combed the internet and that's all I got. So Bish Bash Bosh, You Go Yourself a Movie, Rap Party. This is a Viper Room era. Rap Party, the Viper Room, man.
Surely.
Yeah, definitely. Like he would have been all over the, I mean, Johnny Depp owns the Viper Room. He was all part of that crew, surely.
Surely. Are they mates?
I don't know.
Let's play the trailer.
Yeah, let's play the trailer.
Everyone makes mistakes. Take me, Michael Corbin. I was just your average underachiever flunking out of high school. And the only way to graduate was by taking a class trip to Europe with a French club.
Michael Corbin, first class.
First class? How? Ow! I think there's been a mistake here, which led to a case of mistaken identity.
Walk quickly, they already know you're here.
Hey, what are you doing?
Eric Richards from British Intelligence.
They turned me into a secret agent. Well, just who do you think I am?
Michael Corbin, deep cover agent for the CIA.
Michael Corbin, French class reject. Suddenly, I'm filling someone else's shoes.
They'll adhere to any surface.
And driving the company car.
Get out of town.
I can drive this baby out of here. Right now.
Yes. Piece of cake. I can just figure out how to get the window down. Yeah, and funk driver's ed, too. I'm not complaining. They're gorgeous women.
Bonsoir, Mr. Golden.
Boner. I mean, soir.
There can be no more mistakes. Kill him.
And dangerous men. Now, all I have to do is rescue a beautiful girl.
We're all gonna die!
No, Corbin's here.
That's what I mean!
Save Europe. Graduate high school.
Who are you with?
The French club. Hey, no problem.
Richard Grieco, if looks could kill.
That trailer itself is a perfect pop cultural artifact. We don't see many trailers like that, although we did see one recently, I think Buffy, right?
Mm.
It was Luke Perry doing that. And that was like a year later. Must have been the style at the time.
Yeah, style at the time.
I'm trying to think as we're watching that, like what movie could do a trailer like that now? I think it would only be like a Deadpool type of thing.
Ant-Man.
Yeah. Ant-Man. Yeah. Ant-Man or Deadpool or like a Harley Quinn or something, you know, where they get a bit fourth wall breaking type of shit.
Yeah, Deadpool's probably bang on.
You're probably wondering how I got here.
You're probably wondering how I got here.
Yeah.
You can't take over the world anymore, Ryan. Taking over football now? Come on, bro.
Yeah. And the thing is, he seems like a legend of a dude. I'm sure I'd...
He's a massive legend.
Yeah. That's what makes it harder. But he just needs to, like, not make so many movies and play the same character all the time.
He's just doing everything. He's pretty cool. I can't remember. I just like him.
Maybe this is jealousy that you guys are hearing right now from both of us.
Probs. Yeah.
You know, our gin never really took off the way we...
Yeah, we haven't bought that Division League Two football club and saved it. And
neither of us married Blake Lively.
No, well, not yet.
Yeah, true. What happened in this movie, Greg?
Carol would welcome Blake, I would imagine, with open arms. What happened in this movie? Well, we all know what it's like.
Yeah.
You know, you remember back to high school. You're due to graduate.
You look 30.
You get up on stage. Yeah. I'm 40.
It's crazy because it was like 26 or something. So it wasn't that old, but he just looks fucking old. Yeah.
Man, he would have looked 30 when he was 18, I reckon. He's just...
But why did they cast him in 21 Jump Street where the whole premise is to look like a kid, an adult that looks like a kid, but he's an adult that looks older than he is?
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
It's so weird. He's like Benjamin Button, but he didn't get younger as he got older. He just like had a head start in aging, I guess.
Yeah.
The opposite of Ralph Macchio. Ralph Macchio looks about 25 now.
I feel like Ralph probably hasn't had the same life as Richard either.
Certainly not.
I feel like
I feel like
Richard might have partied.
Yeah, I feel like a big night or a big day for Ralph Macchio is if he has two coffees in one day or something.
Yeah, Richard probably only has 2 days in a week.
yeah.
We'll wait for all of it. Anyway, look, he, as I say, he's been partying. And, you know, when you look 40, you can get into any bar you want. So no fake ID. That's true. He's probably pulling MILFs. Anyway, he's flunking high school.
Yeah.
But he's often the case for the privileged. All it was going to take for him to pass was just a little trip to France at the end of the school year.
Man.
A little summer vacay.
How fucking crazy is that? Is that a thing?
I don't believe so. I just can't imagine that's actually a thing.
Does that French teacher just get to go every year?
I was meant to go to France 1 year, but I applied too late and didn't get to go.
Damn. What could have been?
Oh, I mean, there would have been a Greg Carney on that flight.
Yeah, suction cup.
That was a secret agent, LA gear. Anyway, so yes, his parents foot the bill to this for this trip to France. In a classic mix-up at the airport, Michael Corbin is also the name of a CIA undercover spy. And he's got a first-class ticket on that flight.
Sure does, yeah.
But he gets killed by Billy Kwong answering a phone call for our Michael Corbin. So then our Michael Corbin just cruises in and sits in the first-class seat. First class in 1991, more on that later.
Yeah.
Look, the fact that there would have been two Michael Corbins in the system on the flight schedule, you know, whatever, semantics.
Yeah.
He's now Michael Corbin, the spy.
I don't think there's ever been a movie that says their name that much. Like the word Michael Corbin must have been said, I don't know, every scene, basically.
Well, maybe it comes second for Corbin said the second most times in a movie is on account of Fifth Element.
Oh.
And Chris Tucker saying Corbin, Cabin.
True. That's very astute on your part.
So Cabin is in Paris, France.
Oh.
And he's basically mistaken for this CIA guy and just adapts to a life as a spy. So from there he has your usual Parisian experience, a bit of high-stakes gambling. He's seduced by a beautiful lady who confuses her attacking scorpion for some sort of orgasmic fit and then sees her corpse after she's shot with a bazooka. And he also gets to drive around in a Lotus Esprit with Gabrielle Anwar sleeping beautifully in the passengers. And then ultimately he's trying to stop a bad guy who's anti-Brexit and he's just creating the EU and the euro currency.
You know, I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm just saying he had some ideas, man.
Yeah. So it's got Lotus Esprit. It's got LA Gear sneakers. It's got Gabrielle Anwar.
Are you a big Gabrielle Anwar man?
I guess she
looked really familiar.
She popped up sporadically.
Yeah, she looked really familiar. She's one of those. I'm like, I know her, but I don't know her. And then I looked her up and she looks quite different now. So I couldn't quite connect all the dots of what I'd seen her in.
She's in some other 80s movies where she plays the elusive love interest.
Of course.
I forget. It's like, I don't know, with Michael J. Fox. I don't know.
That's something there.
She's a babe.
Yeah. The concierge or something.
She the concierge chick?
I don't know.
She's in something like that.
I forgot that movie existed right now.
The problem is we'll never know.
We'll never know. We should do The Concierge though.
We should. We should do some non-blockbuster.
I think we are.
Some non-blockbuster Michael J.
Coming all the way in at number 119. Oh, non-blockbuster Michael J. I was thinking it would be cool to do a mini-series of like the B-sides, you know?
For the Love of Money
is
the Michael J. Fox one.
I forgot that was a movie.
Sorry.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you first. How did you like this film or did you like this film? There was a lot of build up trying to just even
I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
Sure, it's not perfect. Sure, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Sure, it's terrible.
But it's so enjoyable.
And I loved it. Like I was,
I assumed it
was going to be crap, but then I was like, this actually knows what it's doing. This is being a smartass.
Yeah. Yeah, I was enjoying it too and I wasn't sure if it was just my nostalgia. I mean, it definitely is a huge part of it for me. But I wasn't sure, yeah, with your fresh eyes.
It was fun. What's not to like? It was like all the favourite bits of Bond.
Yeah.
with just being a smart ass. And then like the whole Greco looking 40 thing is just actually just adds to it. Right? Like he doesn't look like a kid, but that was, I think that's a fluke because they wanted, Michael Hall or whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who actually looks, he looks 12.
Yeah.
So the fact that they've got this guy is probably a glorious, I don't know how they wouldn't have known though. He's got a 5 o'clock shadow by 10 a.m.
Man. Yeah.
He's so hairy, he's had to sculpt his eyebrows.
That's the thing. Oh, man.
Over sculpting.
Okay, just let me get out of the way. I enjoyed this film a lot too for all the same reasons. Yeah. But the eyebrows thing, man. It was so distracting. And like he was a model. I'll get into that later. So this is obviously like me saying he's weird looking. He's a model. Like he's a good looking fella. But the eyebrows thing, why? It just, the whole thing just looks weird with those eyebrows. Like it just seems, it's a weird look,
man. Maybe they just overplucked and then they had to sort of regroup. Because it looks like they've shaved half off. I once got my eyebrow shaved on a late night. They were halfway through thinning one out and it looked kind of like that. That ever happened to you?
No. But he has such dark features too. So he like his eyelashes look like eyeliner. And so with those eyebrows done too, it's like this weird thing because he's obviously looks like a man as a supposed child, but also kind of has
a
like
bit draggy.
This. Yeah, a little bit.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, it's a weird look. It's such a weird look. And so it was constantly on my mind because I just keep looking at it like
the film a little
bit. It's like when you see someone with a bad haircut in a movie and I always just think, what would I do if I was in there? Like, what would I do to look better? And where I netted it out was, yeah, just don't do that to your eyebrows and grow a beard, mate. So I solved that.
It is hard to take him as a teenager. Because he looks the same age as his parents in that opening scene.
And a lot of the childlike innocence that he's supposed to be delivering doesn't – it feels weird. It's like, what? I get to drive this car? I get it's a Lotus and everything. It's a cool car. But still, it just seems like
– yeah.
I don't know, man. It's
and being awkward with the chick, it's like this doesn't look –
yeah.
Like you'd be awkward with that chick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was a bit of a fish out of water for the wrong reason.
Yeah. But yeah, in terms of the rewatch itself, there was a lot of, like I said, I misremembered a lot of it. So it was one of those ones where as I'm watching it, everything was a surprise, but then simultaneously like a, oh yeah, that's right. And so it was like deep in my brain unlocking these little chambers. It was quite a weird experience. I did not remember.
Does it make a popping sound?
There's little pups. One member berry pup. Two member berry pup. One member berry that was not a member berry is that Roger Daltrey's in there.
Oh, the.
He was the spy at the beginning, right? I think it was. I actually didn't check that. I thought it was.
I don't know.
It looked like him. Anyway, we'll never know.
I was watching it on my phone. I couldn't get the AirPlay to work.
Here's a little nugget for you, Greg. The song that they played his high school graduation was my school song at Epping Boys High School. Da, 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 da. And I actually decided, you know what, there's a chance I can find it online because Epping Boys High School has a rugby choir. So I Googled Epping Boys High School rugby choir school song and I found it.
Oh, let's do it.
Fucking crazy to watch that because like that was well after my era, but it's basically looked the same. They're doing the same things. It's like a weird thing.
Yeah.
Dressed the same, obviously. Looked like there was a Bartels in there. That wouldn't surprise me. There's always a Bartels around.
Yeah, he's got to be.
We touched on a big one, but let's just like unpack that a little further. The bad guy in this film. I don't know, there's more murder involved, but at least the way they explain it, what they lead with is the currency. he's basically invented the euro.
Yeah.
Like literally coins. Like he's making right? new currency.
Why is that so bad?
Yeah. Yeah.
He wants to centralize
well, the murder.
European currency.
Murder's bad.
No, but yeah, but I mean.
And he compared himself to Hitler. Means,
more about the. Well, look, these are semantics. The actual. Like, why does he need to take that aggressive line? Because what he's suggesting had merits, obviously.
Yeah, there are other avenues that he could take.
Less murdery ones.
Yeah, less murdery ones. You're right. You're right.
Way less murdery ones.
Like not murdering, for instance.
Yeah.
That would be one. How did they end up doing the euro? So someone figured it out eventually.
Yeah, I don't know. This is, again, go see the Cold War podcast.
Yeah, go see them. They'll
have some, or something.
They'll have some astuteness all around that.
Hardcore history if you've got a spare 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say, Greg, I think the most outdated thing in this movie is the depiction of first class.
Oh, what?
The first class cabin on the flight.
Oh, yeah, sorry. What are you saying first glass?
Yeah, it came out funny.
What's first glass? I mean, I could have worked out what you were saying. Because so he's just, you don't even get a pod. You just get like, you get a lazy boy.
Yeah. And to be clear, the thing I hate most about flights is the leg room because I have long legs. So to be clear, I would be perfectly happy with that. I mean, I don't think I'd pay 10 grand or whatever it is to fly first class to Paris, but from New York, probably 20 grand from Australia. Mm-hmm. But man, it's just a lazy boy.
Yeah.
The food was more extravagant than what you actually get. I mean, I've never flown first class.
They don't
just rock around with lobsters.
No, there's not like a whole ribeye sort of carved off the bone.
Yeah.
You're at one of those steakhouses, you know, where they do the
yeah.
They got the special. Which was that one down in the Rocks? Did you ever go to that one, The Cut?
No.
It was a good joint. And then they had like a lunchtime special that was a whole ribeye that had been slow cooked.
Oh, nice.
And you get like a slab of that with a bit of jus. It was pretty awesome.
I'm a Bowery Meat Company devotee now.
I know. You took me there. That was
epic. Good. It's good. Good place, man. Good place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just nearby. It's very convenient.
Everything's nearby you.
The other thing that was a little outdated, slightly less than the first class, but maybe, well, worse in other ways, was the creepy guy on the bus. You know, at one point all the students are on the bus and the girl's asleep and he's like, I'm going to kiss her while she's asleep and then maybe I'll lick her ear. What the fuck is that, man?
Yeah. Yeah. That didn't add to the plot at all either.
It's a weird thing. It's like, you know how we've talked about this recently too, Teen Wolf, the best friend in that was such a dick and not in a charming, self-aware, stifler way, just a dick. It just must have been, I know this was after Teen Wolf, but I guess at the time that was charming or just not charming, but I guess acceptable at least. But it was fucking weird, man.
I know. What a crazy time we live in when you can't even lick a stranger's ear in the bus.
I'm sure it still happens.
World's gone mad.
Yeah, it's more of a subway thing now, probably. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I try to minimize. Actually, I get the bus every day.
You're wearing headphones, though.
Yeah, and it's daytime.
I
think it's like a night bus, like a Greyhound. I reckon there'd still be some stranger ear licking on the odd, you know, nothing wrong with Greyhound. you just probably.
Just if you're getting an overnight Greyhound, break out the earmuffs, protect yourself, be safe out there, people.
Yeah, try not to sleep.
Hey, Greg, you know, you said something very astute before. I say astute because it mirrored the smart words of Sir Roger Ebert, who gave this film 3 out of 4 stars. You see that?
Oh, yeah. I get compared to Ebert all the time.
You do. I took a few little snippets from his review. And it basically lands on the same thing as you. So what does he say? He says, the movie tells a bizarre story about middle Americans trapped inside the Byzantine, I don't even know that word. He's so smart. Intrigues of Europe.
What?
And is perhaps the only film I can recall in which a mad economist traps an entire Detroit high school French class in an iron cage suspended above a cauldron of boiling gold. I love that. But this is the thing that basically you said that I think is like pretty bang on.
Which bit? I didn't say any of that.
But he said at first.
That was the smart bit.
Yeah. You didn't say the smart bit, but you said this bit. Yeah, this is smart too. At first it appears the movie is only going to be another one of those brain damaged caper ripoffs in which the boring people do stupid things at half the pace of real life. Then it turns on the supercharger and transforms itself into the kind hallucinatory fable in which a tiny woman wears...
Hallucinatory.
Yeah, man. And this, my monitor is really far away from my face, so I'm finding it really hard to read. Fable in which a tiny woman wears a golden whip around her neck and uses it to reduce foreign ministers into lumps of placation.
Oh, wow. I remember saying all that. That's exactly what I said.
Then he says, by the time the chateau was in flames and the helicopter was chewing its way across the burning roof, I was ready to concede that, yes, I was enjoying it. I had a similar journey. Like, I was kind of watching it, expecting it to be shit, but knowing that I had a soft spot for it. Sometimes in this scenario too, I also kind of try and watch it through your eyes. Like, oh, I wonder what this is like with fresh eyes. I wonder what Greg would think of this bit, you know? And, and I was enjoying it. I was like, yeah, I like this. I'm into it. But I thought it, you know, it's mostly nostalgia probably. But then by the time we got to the end and he's actually like shooting bad guys and there's explosions and there's pretty significant set pieces, it was a bit of a like, hey, this movie's doing stuff. Like,
yeah,
it was, yeah, I respect that. It was so still extremely kitschy. Like the set design and stuff was almost Austin Powers-esque, like Goldmember basically. It's a cage above molten gold. But it's good fun.
Mm.
I think the bad guy, especially the henchman, could have been weirder because I didn't realize he was even meant to be weird until he spoke at one point and was like,
was the growly.
Yeah.
Was he a bit of a riff on Jaws?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But then give him something because he looked like a very ordinary person. Give him a scar or an eye patch or something.
He looked like he could turn into a good guy at any point, you know, like little old switcheroo to the good guy.
I 100% thought that he and the Euroman were the same guy until I saw them in the same room.
Yeah.
There was, I thought they looked the same, just bland white dude with creasy hair.
I thought
it
might have been my iPhone 14 Pro screen.
I saw it on the big screen and it was the same deal, man.
Okay.
Honestly thought they were the same person.
Yeah.
Actually, on that note, should we get into spy tropes?
Oh, we're pretty safe here. Let's do it.
The only one, as they were pretty safe here, then the first one I see is like, oh, no, they don't have that one. So we added one last week off the back of True Lies, the old guy in the van or guy at the desk, you know, in the earpiece and whatnot. They didn't really have that.
Well, they had the phone call guy. They had to go in on the phone call.
That's true. That's close. And this was 91. True Lies was 94. Like maybe they didn't have that kind of technology yet.
A lot of van surveillance had come a long way in those early 90s.
True, so, and they had Tarragos by that point.
Yeah,
they were equipped.
I give it a soft pass.
Yeah, okay, soft pass. Cars and watches. Yeah, so we had the Lotus Esprit SE, and I think your lady friend had a 300 ZX or something.
She did, mate. They were poignant cars in my youth. Yeah. They were like, oh.
I think even in like Gran Turismo.
300 ZXs still look sick.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Well, the Lotus does too.
I love the aesthetic of those cars. I was going to say 80s cars. I guess this was 91. But I think those models were 80s. Anyway, the boxiness and the sharp lines. I love that shit.
Mate, they're fucking great. My grandparents' neighbor had a 300 ZX. I remember sitting in it thinking I was in like the world's best car.
It's fucking sick.
I reckon you pay a top dollar now for a well maintained one.
Yeah,
in that sort of classic category now. I don't know what.
Park it next to my CRX from True Lies.
Yeah,
the whole Honda suite.
It's a Nissan.
Ah, damn it!
It's a Nissan. Why do they say Nissan over there, Tristan?
Man, there's so many things like that. It's like specifically car brands. They say them all differently.
Yeah,
a Mazda.
That's interesting. Yeah, I remember when I hear rappers sing about. Or rap about cars, and I had to like, what's a Nissan?
Yeah, and instead of Hyundai, they say Hyundai.
I pick you up in my poor psych. You know, I got a Nissan that I'm still paying for. Still got a lease on.
Ah, there you go.
Little Brother,
who's that? For those. I'm not familiar.
Little Brother, oh man, they're great. Check them out.
Okay, Hey, exotic locations. We actually have, again, this man, these guys, they know what they're doing. This is actually a really good proof point of what you were saying. They do know what they're doing. Exotic locations. We're in Gay Paris, man. What else do you need?
Yeah, exactly. We're big location men.
We are location men, yeah.
There's something about a luxe European backdrop that really elevates a spy film.
I do think as well, like, sometimes the city that that a film is set in can almost be a main character, you know?
Oh, gosh, that's so astute.
You could say that. I know that's kind of a crazy thing to say, but I think you could actually say that.
I'm supportive.
Yeah, yeah. High-stakes gambling, that. Like, they're embracing them all, man. Like, they did it properly. High-stakes gambling, tux, you know, those big square chips, not just those round boys.
Yeah, they look like they're worth more.
Exactly.
I couldn't afford whatever they are, like the value of that.
Yeah, at least $8. Plastic. Yeah. Russian? Were there Russians in this? She might have been Russian. Was she Russian, the little lady?
Billy Kwong? Maybe.
She had a weird accent.
She was something. She was awesome.
She was great, man.
She was just
That works free too raging. Because, like, I mean, she's – I say this with the utmost respect, but she's you know, an interesting-looking person, which fits the bill for a Bond spoof type of –
She's a hell of an actor.
And she's – yeah, she's great.
She's an Academy Award-winning actor.
Yeah.
More or less.
For playing an Asian man.
For Billy Kwong.
Yeah, Billy Kwong. Wait, isn't that a restaurant?
Yeah.
Is that her name in that movie? Or
yeah.
Getting your wires crossed.
No, she's Billy Kwong.
Wow, that's it's both.
The Fear of Living Dangerously. It's an Aussie, I think David, what's his name? David
Stratton.
Aussie playwright legend.
Oh.
No, God. My God, I've got a mental blank. It's an Australian story.
There you go. I didn't know that.
Year of Living Dangerously. Oh, you didn't do it at school?
No.
David Williamson, sorry, there we go.
Yeah,
look it up. Year of Living Dangerously. She played Billy Kwong, who was Mel Gibson's character's, like, local
guide or something, right? We have talked about this before, and I was trying to figure out what movie it was because it must have been riffing on her, but I can't remember what she's been in that we've covered before.
Kindergarten
Cop, yeah. Light bulb.
Yeah, she does the pew, pew.
Yeah, 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 of course.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah.
I like her. She's established, maybe because of this movie for me, or in Kindergarten Cop, but she's established in there as like childhood canon, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's good mix of like this. She's pretty out there, not much time. And she's just, you know, doing a funny accent.
And she knows what she's doing. She's playing it at the right level.
Yeah, exactly. She's on board. And then Kindergarten Cop, she's awesome in that as well. I think she's proper.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's not making up the numbers.
And she might be Russian.
She's an Academy Award winner. And she may be Russian.
Babes/misogyny. Kinda. I mean, well, misogyny wise, we've got ear licking. But babes wise, we've got babes, man.
Yeah. Penthouse pet.
Oh, really? Scorpion chick.
I just had to double check.
Did you triple check as well? I think he's quadruple checking as we
her
speak.
Her name's Carol Davis.
Ah.
Oh, it is Roger Daltrey as Blade.
Oh, there you go.
Carol Davis. She was a penthouse pet in Areola Canasta. What a great – that
should have been her name.
Bond name.
Oh, that was her name. Her name. Oh, I thought you said from. I thought that was like a place. Her name was Areola.
Areola Canasta.
Fucking respect, man.
She was a penthouse pet of the month, January 1980.
I wonder what that original script was like because there's some gold in there. Like maybe that kind of shit is from the original script that was maybe even better.
Yeah.
So it would have been fun to see a we've done this before too. We always forget his name. Is it Anthony Michael Hall? It's the three words, the three names always throws me. But it would have been fun to see a guy like that do this role too.
Yeah.
But I do also see the fun in having a guy that looks 40 do it.
Yeah.
In like a wet, hot American summer way.
Yeah, I'm not going to try and change it. Yeah, that's right. I don't know if it was intentional. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's a bit like how Keanu Reeves in Dracula kind of ended up working for it in a weird fever dream kind of way, even though in English accent it's not his forte.
Yeah, some things just work.
Double crossing. not really double crossing. I kind of thought the chick might double cross, but she didn't. She stayed true, respect. But I guess just the bad guy was set up as a good guy, so that's almost, I don't know. It's dishonest at the very least.
He was, yeah, he was double crossing, well,
Europe.
Yeah. But also not.
Yeah.
Greco was basically just pro-Brexit at the end of the day.
He was, yeah.
Before it was even needed.
He's like, England's full.
I don't want your oranges, Spain. We've got kumquats.
They take up less space.
I assume that's how the conversation went.
Yeah, I think so. Greg, finally, we get to pay off our favorite trope, which has been sorely lacking in a couple of our last movies.
Oh, yeah.
Chekhov's gadgets. Gadgets that are introduced Chekhov's in the first act that pay off later on. Mate, we've got X-ray glasses. That's an early one that kind of just, you know, gives us a bit of a taste. Explosive
that
gum.
Paid off.
Explosive gum almost forget about. Like, that's a perfect execution. But when he finally pulls it out.
That's gone on to feature in other films too.
Oh, really? Like what?
Yeah. I think it's, what did I read? Mission Impossible has exploding gum.
No way. Interesting.
Yeah, Ethan Hunt himself.
I think Axel Foley uses gum foil to open a lock or something at one point.
Oh, yeah, he does. He does. He's street smart. He is.
Yeah. Chekhov's gum, I guess you could say.
There you go. There it is.
Yeah. Gravity-defying suction boots. And the only one that wasn't a Chekhov scenario was just the surprise armpit gas. I don't think they didn't introduce that early, did they?
I don't believe so. What was that?
Oh, this is good fun.
They fell asleep and they were snoring. That was like, wow. That was the moment I was like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, and so we're three spy films in now, Greg, and that is by far the most robust set of spy tropes we've been able to talk through.
Yeah, I think only Austin Powers might rival it.
Oh, big time. I can't wait. This is a nice bridge, actually, into Austin Powers, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bridge.
It's a bridge.
Can I, could we just unpack the story of the suction boot suppliers for a moment?
Yeah.
LA Gear?
Yes.
LA Gear, what's your experience or what's your, I mean, you're a Nikeman now, you work with Nike. What do you know about LA Gear? Do they get discussed in the competitive set?
Not these days. But
not these days.
I did think they were cool. Was I associating with them with Vanilla Ice for some reason? I don't know. Like at this era, I think we talked about shoes recently and, you know, we went pretty modest with sneakers at that point in my life. And I had some Lynx shoes. My dad lived in Singapore though, and I think I got some good deals on some Reeboks here and there.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, when you're a kid, your feet grow so fast that, you know, it's kind of a waste of money. But LA Gear I always thought were cool. My little brother did eventually get some LA Lights. Remember LA Lights?
Vaguely.
They were LA Gear that they'll light up at the bottom, like when you walk on them.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And I think he fell in the water at Darling Harbour and then they stopped working.
Oh, in that fountain thing?
Yeah, not in like the harbour, but yeah, just in the,
Well, can they give you a little bit of a very quick spiel on LA Gear?
Okay.
Interesting. I was in Big W maybe around Christmas time a couple of months ago, just grabbing like a couple of last minute kids' gifts.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw a bunch of LA Gear stuff. I was like, whoa, how the mighty have fallen. So they were, I think they came up in, let's have a look, 83 they were founded. And they came out of the gates pretty hard and they were sponsoring Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh,
so he ended his long association with Adidas towards the end of his playing career. So that's obviously a huge name. Karl Malone, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Whoa.
Pretty massive. Niners quarterback, Joe Montana. Hockey star, Wayne Gretzky.
Potentially like Vanilla Ice.
Proper lords. Yeah,
I'm just having a
look further look down. Definitely Michael Jackson, Paula Abdul. So they were like.
What era was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Because the Jordan 1 was like 85, right? So was that?
He was way back when.
Yeah.
I don't know when he would have.
Did he have a signature shoe, or was it just like a deal?
Well, he played in like the '70s and whatnot. When did he? I don't know when he.
Yeah, interesting.
His exact. I mean, he played for a long time.
Yeah. I see photos now and then of like players from different eras, and I forget that they even crossed over. Like even today, I was looking for pictures for a deck that I'm writing, and I even just seeing Jordan and Kobe play. Like, wait, what? You forget that was even possible. How's that even? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's. I think he finished in like 89. So he played for a long time.
Yeah, right.
So LA Gear had all these, and then I don't know what happened, but popularity waned, and then they've gone through a few rounds of bankruptcy, but they've kind of relaunched it in some way, shape, or form. But it's gone from being like cultural zeitgeist, you know, all-star players shoe to Big W line.
Honestly, I think it's a shit name. I think you can't have a name that means anything in the general consciousness. The name's got to be abstract. Nike, what does it mean? No one knows. I mean, it does mean something. That's a Greek god or something, right? Reebok, what the fuck does that mean? New Balance, I think, has had similar struggles. They're doing well now with the 550s and such. But like the name, it needs to be just an abstract name that becomes meaningful because you're doing cool shit. LA Gear, it's like, well, what if I don't like LA? What if LA is not trending? What if the LA riots just happened? You know, like, is this a good thing for your brand? You know, I think it's
It's very astute on your part.
Thank you. So that's all I got on that.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, I never had it. Did you have any? No.
I don't think so.
No.
No.
I did do a little research on Mr. Greco.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me give you a whirlwind tour.
Please.
So he was born in on March 23rd. Great day.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, it's my birthday.
Shares a birthday with none other than Tristan Burrell.
Yeah, yeah. 1965. 1984? Nah, 65. 64. So he's 58 now, so he's really grown into his age. And he started as a model. He was an actual fashion model for Armani, Calvin Klein, and Chanel. You know, he's like legit. When I read that, I did have some suspicions that he'd been tinkering with his Wikipedia page himself. You know, I think there's some people that probably do that. I could imagine Frank Dukes maybe doing a similar thing.
Guilty.
Yeah, guilty. I keep trying to write one and they keep taking it down. So he was a legit model. And, you know, I looked up photos and he had eyebrows and everything. So I don't know. Why change it? If that was model perfect, why change your eyebrows, man?
Maybe they thought it would make him look younger.
Yeah, fuck, maybe that was it. No, but I think his eyebrows are just like that now. Like he seems, that's his look, I think.
I don't know, man.
It's a real shame. Wasted brow. What a wasted brow. He could have been Brooke Shields with those brows. She has a good brow. So he was a model. He's also a musician, Greg.
Yep.
So he began singing in 1994 with the Dunmire brand. Band, sorry.
What, he hadn't sung before that?
No. I guess that's a good point. Yeah. It's a good point. I guess he just like joined a band and started singing that day. He signed to a German label and released a CD called
Kraftwerk.
Waiting for the Sky to Fall in 1995. He then re-released the album in 2011, making it available on streaming services such as iTunes. And when I read that, I was like, oh, well, I've got iTunes. Let's have a little listen.
I've been talking to the same man deep in my dreams. I really don't know why he's been bothering me. I never know which way the wind is gonna blow. I wake up in the sunrise thinking of you. I stumble out of bed wondering what did I do. I never
So it came out in 1995 originally.
Which way the
wind, and then re-released in 2011.
Well, I guess I never faced what I should have faced.
I feel like there must be a crescendo coming here. Here we go. I'm waiting for the sky.
Got a bit of like Bryan Adams-y vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Mixed with like Ice House maybe.
Yeah, like if you run out of music from those people, maybe you could moosey on over to that.
If you like that sort of 80s, late 80s soft rock sort of synthy vibe. It's poppy rock.
It's true, yeah. very stood on your part. Hey, but it doesn't end there, Greg. He's also a painter.
Waiting for the sky to fall.
Oh, that works, yeah. I wonder if they've got that at Ding Dong Dang. Oh, Ding Dong Dang doesn't exist anymore.
I'm going to go and find it on the old guitar tab.
Yeah.
Strip it. I'm going to strip it right back.
He's also a painter, Greg. So his good pal, Dennis Hopper, apparently encouraged him.
R.I.P.
Yeah, in 2009 he publicly revealed that he'd been painting since 1991. I'm losing all my words today, singing? Greg, because I've been working 14 hours.
What time did you get up this morning?
3:30.
3:30. Oh my God.
That's a go to bed time, not a wake up time.
Yeah, you can't go to bed, Dad.
Did you wake up alive? He called. This is what you alluded to earlier, Greg. So, yeah, he sold his first painting for $10,000. $10,900. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I should try and sell my paintings for $10,000. He calls his work abstract emotionalism.
Mm.
Yeah.
He's got a website. You can jump on and have a look.
Oh, yeah? Is it any good? Is it better than Stallone? Stallone stuff's all right.
Yeah, some of them's all right. Yeah. I was trying to see how much they were fetching because I'm always curious to see what art goes for.
Yeah.
But it's got a sold section, but it doesn't list the prices.
That means it's expensive.
Does it?
I don't know. If something doesn't have a price, I exit immediately.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Or if someone gives me a free drink, I'm like, I can't afford to shop here. That's when you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, not too many shops I go into give me free drinks.
I remember last time we moved to New York and we were furniture shopping, there's this shop called Design Within Reach. And I was like, oh, Within Reach, that sounds like my speed. Walked in and they gave me a water bottle. Bad sign.
Yeah.
Like this is just beyond reach, perhaps.
Yeah. This is way beyond reach.
Hey, he's also done voice work. And
what if it's a brand of water you don't even know?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I didn't even know this country existed. All these minerals. Yeah.
It's all a glacier. The whole country's a glacier?
From the glaciers of the moon? He also did voice work, Greg, and he had like a thing, I guess. This is actually interesting. So he voiced Ghost Rider in the Marvel versus Capcom games and also voiced Ghost Rider in the Fantastic Four cartoon and voiced Ghost Rider in the Hulk animated series. This is all back in the 90s, which is weird. And I could see him as a Ghost Rider type of dude. He's kind of got a Nick Cage energy to him too, doesn't he?
And then Nick Cage swooped in and took the role. Goddamn Nepo baby.
Richard Grieco and Nicolas Cage would either be best friends or worst enemies. I can't quite tell.
That's very astute.
They were probably bidding on the same cemetery pyramid or something, you know. Or bidding on the same dinosaur skull.
I would love to know the inner workings of this of Grieco's social network.
Yeah. Me too.
In a diagram form, ideally.
Yeah.
If someone wants to what bang that up for us.
He also did one of the voices in that cartoon Gargoyles. Remember Gargoyles?
Of course.
Yeah, he did one of them. And finally, he's a producer man as well, television producer. He produced the TV reality show. I don't know if you've seen this one, Greg. It was big in my household with my old roommates
over here
back in 2012.
Survivor?
Gigolos. You ever seen Gigolos? It's a reality show about gigolos.
I don't believe so. Oh.
Gigolos. It's fucking hilarious. It's great. And he looks like he could be a cast member. Like there's that vibe. It's amazing. If you haven't watched Gigolos, check it out. Anyway, should we get into the verdict of this film, Greg?
Yeah.
We've learned about Grieco. We've done the tropes. We've covered it all. Can you believe it?
There's nothing else to say.
This is probably the longest anyone's talked about this movie, so we should be proud of that. Yeah. Let's get into the verdict.
For you, Richard.
For you, Richard.
Rashad. Maybe he goes by the name Rashad.
Oh, he could, yeah. It's possible.
I don't think so, but anything's possible.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
The law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for, huh?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Does anything fundamentally break or not hold up? Man, overall, no. Like, this actually, I didn't think of it this way, but all things considered, this film isn't outdated other than just overall aesthetic, but that just adds to the charm.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of holds up nicely. It's both a time capsule, but also still just stands on its own as like a weird spy semi-spoof. I don't know. Yeah.
Semi-spoof.
FX test.
Pre-cum.
I'm dying. That's good.
Tristan's having a moment.
That was fucking funny. I'm a bit delirious. But that was funny.
It's all right. Yeah.
That was, hey, that doesn't take away from that zinger, Greg. That was fucking good. Can zingers be astute? Because that was pretty astute.
Why not?
FX test. Not bad. There was one part with the suction boots thing where he was like the angle was it didn't look physically right.
Didn't look too suctiony.
Yeah.
That's probably the LA Gear people's fault.
That's true. Work on your suction, people. Representation. Bechdel test, no. But there are like more female characters than average, I would say, for 1991. Again, I always feel like I'm trying to mansplain my way out of Bechdel test, but yeah, it does not pass.
Always. That's kind of who you are.
Yeah.
Nah, you're not. Just kidding, mate.
Race Bechdel, Frenchies don't count, so no. Cultural relevance. No, this fails on all fronts, doesn't it? Did Simpsons do it? No. Porn parody? No. I mean, that's the thing with this film, but also why it's kind of a pleasure to revisit is that it is almost, you forget that it exists.
Mm.
It's nice to crack that open, right? And feast on the goo inside.
Feast on the goo inside, that's right.
So overall, man, it is a rewatch for me, but, you know, I can't extract the nostalgia goals from my retinas on this one. I enjoyed it, but I can't really distinguish how much of that was memory lane versus the quality of the movie. But I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed it. How about you?
Yeah, it was all right. It was all right. You know, it was the plot was worthy of a Bond film.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. It was strange in a you know, palatable way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this lives in a similar zone to like, there's a few movies like this we've done where you kind of forget they exist, or some of them I didn't even know existed, like Men at Work. Little Monsters, I know, didn't quite hold up. But I don't know, these movies that are just like the world has forgotten they exist, and, yeah, it's like cracking open Tutankhamun's tomb and then like looking at some artifact that the world has forgotten about. It's they're fun to do these movies. You know, versus the big blockbusters all the time. I enjoy them. People don't listen to them as much.
Me too.
But they're fun to explore.
They are.
MVP, maybe Billy Kwong.
Sure. Yeah.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly not the girl. She was actually pretty bad. There were a couple of moments in this where she was real bad.
She was sleeping.
Yeah, she's a good sleeper, yeah.
You're cute. Sleeper.
What are we doing now? Next week? Yeah. Is it Austin Powers?
Now that'll be easy to find somewhere, surely.
Imagine that, man. What the fuck?
It's got Netflix written all over it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, gang.
All right.
We'll see you next
week. In the meantime, keep voting. Keep voting on your favorites. Leave a review if you haven't left one before, please. They really help us with the whole podcast thing.
They do. Leave a review.
Your stars and words are always appreciated, team.
They make us feel a warm
Thanks
and fuzzy.
Again for the hookup of the AVI as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Respect. Alrighty. Bye.
Bye.
Richard, you look great tonight. Tonight is Oscar night, big night in Hollywood. So tell us about coming out.
I haven't been out much the past 4 years, and been mostly painting for the past 3 years, it's a fun night to go out. It's a fun night to go out, yeah.
You're pretty busy. You're executive producing a show on Showtime. Tell us about that.
I'm executive producer and creator of Gigolos in Showtime. We're in our third season of that. And that's an interesting show because it was one of those shows that everyone knows what a gigolo is, but it was taboo and now it's in the mainstream, you know, where we kind of brought it in the mainstream because it's really prevalent out there. And I think, look, every show is about girls pleasing men. Why not do it about a show about guys pleasing girls?